Hello and welcome to the Back to Movement podcast. This is your host, Bernadette. And this show features everything you need to know about back pain, fitness, wellness, and movement science. It's evidence-based, bringing you the latest scientific research along with expert tips so you can live pain-free. And my mission here is to help you achieve a healthy back, leading you to a life full of vitality with the freedom of movement. Many of us believe that we need to actively engage our core to work and to think our spine is very fragile and we need to protect it. But does current research and evidence support this view? Today, we are going to talk about this topic with a very special guest. I am so excited to introduce you to Mila Aleshina. She is a functional movement coach, passionate about anatomy. She's a fully certified Pilates instructor and mobility specialist in Switzerland. And I am so excited to have her here. Please help me welcome Mila Aleshina to the Back to Movement podcast.
Hi, Bernadette. Well, thank you very much. I'm really happy to be here and talk with you on this really important topic where there's, you know, so much miscommunication and so much noise. So from my point of view as a movement instructor, Pilates and mobility coach, I'd love to, you know, share my insights and go over this with you.
Thank you so much. I so appreciate you accepted my invitation. And yes, it is a very interesting topic because what we thought 15 years ago is not the case what we are doing today. Because as you are a Pilates instructor too, 15 years ago in the Pilates world, we thought that we need to actively engage our core to work our core, right?
I'd say even not 15 years ago, even shorter time, there was still okay. That information being provided.
Yeah. Okay. So, but why do you think there's such a widespread belief that the spine is, for example, fragile and we need to protect it before any movement?
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, that's a really good question. I don't really know why we have that kind of communication, but I have seen and heard it so many times, you know, even to this day when I see some of my clients, there is, you know, still this, you know, miscommunication about fragility, that, you know, when they'll come to me and they'll be, no, my back is so weak, it's so fragile, I can't do this, what can I do? And there's, you know, so much fear of movement and, you know, the worst thing about poor communication about our own body is that it leads us to believe that miscommunication, and that can be really harmful. So even though I don't know why exactly that started or why it's carried on for so long, I do believe that the mentality around, you know, how fragile our bodies are needs to change because it disempowers the person suffering from pain. And I think it's important to, you know, it's not a clear cut answer to this question, but we need to bring more education and empowerment to our, in my case, my clients versus fear.
Yes. It's very interesting you mentioned that just because, you know, we are in pain and we straight away think that we are fragile and we are weak because we are in pain, right?
Mm.
And that's a really good point, what you mentioned, that people come to you and they say they are in pain and they think they are weak and they are fragile. But pain doesn't equal to that your body is fragile, that your body is not strong. It's just that you are a human being and you are in pain because being in pain is being a human.
you know, I guess
that it happens. Yeah, constant exactly, pain and constant excruciating pain, of course, that's a different story.
Yeah. I guess, you know, part of living is that sometimes we, you know, push our bodies, you know, a little too much. We spend too much time, you know, sitting in still
in front of the TV.
Of the screen. Or, yeah, exactly. Or even worse, in front of the screen and then going to the TV and assuming the same position. So, yeah, a part of like our modern culture and, you know, work-life environments, that, you know, even experts on back pain and physical therapists and osteopaths, I've met them and they'll still experience, you know, moments of pain. Mm-hmm. So in their back, and it, you know, doesn't mean that they don't know what they're doing. It just means that, you know, there's certain aspects in our lives where we feel some aches and pains in our body.
Absolutely true. Usually if I have too much going on, I feel my low back, and I'm a back pain expert. I'm thinking, what the heck with my back? But I think about, okay, we just moved. We are just renovated the house. I feel my body is telling me something. Maybe I need to slow down a little bit.
Yeah, I think the being intuitive with yourself is really key, because when we're talking from a strength perspective on feeling aches and pains in the body or even injury, you know, it's really a simple math where we have pain or we have an injury because the load on the body was more than the body could take. Mm-hmm. It could be, you know, an impact that comes right mm-hmm. away, like catching something heavy or falling. Or it could be like the continuous strains when you said like you're moving houses and you're constantly probably lifting, picking up, twisting, moving, which are all, you know, functional. All movement that we are using are functional movement for us. But it just means that the body is getting tired, possibly in your case.
Yeah, yeah. And that's when you mentioned intuitive with your body. And that's, it came to me in my mid-30s, probably a little too late. You know, you start to listen to your body. Your body is trying to tell you something. Mm-hmm. And that's actually true. You kind of like need to know when not to push yourself. Maybe you have too much going on this week. At work, at home, and maybe it isn't the best time to push your body more at the gym. Don't put that extra plate on when you're squatting. Maybe it's not a good idea to explore, you know, with extra heavy weights. What do you think?
Yeah, there's actually twofold thought process as you were saying this. You know, we, at least when I was a bit younger, and I still hear it from some of my older clients, that, you know, no pain, no gain. Mm-hmm. And that, you mm-hmm. know, if I don't feel like I'm dead after a workout, it means I didn't do anything. And it's such a terrible way to think about exercise, because, you know, very often we are our own best advisors. You know, if we really focus during movement on how we're moving and how we're feeling through that movement, we will probably know when enough is enough. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's important to listen to those moments and not the, you know, the mantras of no pain, no gain, because, you know, getting into an injury and being in pain, there's zero gain to that. So that's one way that I think about it. Another way, and this is something that, you know, I still see sometimes with clients, and I find it to be quite a challenging obstacle to overcome, is the aspect of being intuitive in your life or your movement practice in general. And what I mean by that is, some people will come into a class with me and they will want me to do it for them. You know, okay, I have a pain, like let's fix it. And there's so much more that comes into it, is that I'm constantly asking for feedback, you know, so not telling me or being honest with your own self while exercising where your limits are, you know, just not a smart way to work out. And so as an instructor, you know, I can do so much in cueing and coaching, but just because my body moves this way, just because I've seen, you know, three other clients before you that moved in this certain way, doesn't mean that you're going to move like that. Mm-hmm. And so being intuitive with your body during exercise, in exploring your range, kind of getting to know where you're comfortable, even if we're doing smaller movements, is super important, because it just goes back to, you can be told so much, but it's when you start kind of training yourself that you'll feel the best benefits, I think.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And many people with back pain fear movement because they believe their spine, as we mentioned, unstable, fragile. How do you think we can, as Pilates instructors and, you know, movement professionals, help with that mindset?
So, you know, when I was doing my mobility training, one thing kept coming over and over again. If you stop moving within a certain range of motion, you will stop moving within a certain range of motion. So if your, you know, back hurts and all you do now is keep yourself upright, you avoid any kind of twisting or bending, okay, you might find some relief because during the acute phases, maybe the twisting is aggravating you. So of course, you don't want to be pushing, just like what we said earlier, into a training or moving intuitively and listening to your body. But if you forever stop that movement because you have identified that movement as a bad movement for you, your body is unprepared to take you there. So, you know, you could be sitting in a car and you're looking back to, I don't know, look at your kid, maybe look at the car or something behind you. And all of a sudden you get into that rotation and all of a sudden you are unprepared. So you might trigger more pain. And you know, it's a really great topic because it's important to understand when to avoid certain movement, you know, during the acute phases, during phases where we're in pain going there. But we can explore pain-free range of motion. And then when we're getting better, we have to keep improving our mobility because if I can lift my arm all the way up, but I can't catch a ball all the way up because I have no strength, all of that is injury zone. So if I stop moving there, I'll either lose mobility altogether or I'll become weak and become more prone to injury. And the same goes for the spine. So yes, there is a time and a place where we should minimize certain movements, not to aggravate our pain, but we have to come back to a state of being confident and comfortable to move in our bodies.
Yes, and this is when you already touched base on it's really important to communicate with your instructor, whether your physical therapist. It's a good, really good example. My mom was suffering, you know, very bad back pain, and she had numerous surgeries. And I remember she had physical therapy. She was in the hospital for 2 weeks, and that was back in 2006, sorry. So anyway, and it was before my graduation, and a week after she was in this physical therapy, whatever, hospital back in Hungary, and she told the physical therapist that this is hurting her, and the physical therapist, no, it should be fine, this is the exercise and you need to do it. The next day she could barely walk. She could not get out of bed.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So whoever listening and you have back pain and a movement professional or a physical therapist or anyone tells you and trying to force you to do something, you are absolutely okay not to. Because actually, you know your body best. Yeah. So if you work within your pain tolerance, it is okay. But if that movement is aggravating you or makes it worse, you listen to yourself, not to anyone, and always be skeptical, right? Because if someone is forcing you, even though you're pain, they don't know what they are doing.
Yeah, actually, you know, I'm really sorry to hear that about your mom and that she was, you know, taken out of that zone because you are talking to somebody you trust, you know. So at least with my area, not being a physical therapist or an osteopath in any sort, I think people can be more skeptical to a movement trainer, which is great. And they, but they also should be, you know, skeptical to anyone who's telling them to move where they're just not safe. And I've had clients that have come to me and, you know, they've, you know, had some back pain from running, or they felt it after they ran. And so the physical therapist, actually, this is a real case, told them everything is fine, you can go back to running. So the client tried to run and said, no, my back still hurt. So I said, okay, so what did you do? And she said, I stopped running. She stopped running full time. So that was such poor advice, because it didn't empower her. It just made her feel incapable. Mm-hmm. You know, so the idea is not to say, oh yeah, you're good. Go run, go do this, you're fine. It's okay, so where are you right now? What are the steps that we can take so that you regain that confidence? And confidence comes with strength, it comes with practice, so that you can resume and live your life better, as opposed to narrow it down to whatever's left to do.
Exactly. I definitely agree with that. I believe that especially when it comes to chronic low back pain, you know, not acute, when you have been dealing with chronic back pain for a while, movement is good, but only in a degree so it doesn't stop you. So the movement doesn't stop you from the movement, because you probably lost a little bit of confidence in your body because you're dealing with chronic back pain. You don't trust your body as much because you are afraid that one movement again, you know, is going to aggravate it and you're going to have a flare up and you're going to be in bed for weeks again. So I think working within the pain tolerance, and even if you have a little pain and it subsides within 24 hours, it is okay. But I do believe that, first of all, make the range of motion smaller, you know, in a movement. And if that doesn't help, just stop it.
Yeah, adapt the movement to your body, not your body to the movement.
But again, everyone is different, you know. I mean, you need to look at the person, you know.
Yeah, that's why, you know, quick fixes are so, are such a, you know, peeve for me, because they almost advise you to do this to feel this. And the person is very different, you know, their injuries, their mental state, fear around that specific movement. So there isn't anything that's, you know, everyone should do X, Y, Z like this. We have to stop, you know, putting those boxes and start sharing advice and helping people better learn about what their body can do and adapt the exercise for their body.
Exactly. I definitely agree with that. Let's talk about core. It's an interesting topic, jumping from our spine being fragile to the core. So what did you learn when you, so how long have you been Pilates instructor?
So just about over 8 years.
Over 8 years. Okay. So did you also learn about, you know, engaging your core before movement? Okay. All right. So what do you think about what you learned 8 years ago, and how is your thinking, you know, changed?
I guess it's a broad topic to kind of answer, but probably a lot in the way that I cue, you know, core engagement. And that actually came from my clients. So, you know, when I came back to Switzerland, I started working with some clients and they're like, yeah, you know, I was told to, when I engage my abs, I have to like pull them in. And I was like, okay, let's move, you know. And so during movement, we at least I noticed, we realized that it's not that they were engaging their core, they were just sucking in, which is, you know, not the same. And so they've been told that, and they've been told that that's good because it visually looks like their core is engaging. But in fact, they're just going, and they're just sucking in their belly, which is not the same
thing.
Well,
the tummy looks flatter though, right? It's not necessarily a bad thing.
There you go. There's a quick fix to to core engagement. So yeah, I think a lot in cueing. And I still put a lot of emphasis on you know, moving with control and, you know, the role that core plays. But, you know, people that come to my workouts will be like, oh, I want to do abs, I want to do core. But the reality is that, like, when we're doing your arms, your core is working. When we're doing your legs, because I'm asking you to, depending on the exercise, but, you know, if I'm asking you to move through the legs, like leg circles on the reformer, and I really want to focus on those hamstrings and inner thigh stretching, and I ask you to keep your torso still and not rounding it so that we can get a nicer hamstring stretch when we lift the legs up, your core is working. Because if your core wasn't working, your spine would probably not be able to, you know, be as still. And it's the same, you know, when we run, when we sneeze, you know, so many areas of our lives activate our core. So core workouts to work the core. Okay, I get that. We like to feel and see that. But our core works, you know, all the time, most of the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I think your core is working when you go to the bathroom, when you sit down on the toilet.
There you go.
One of my favorite exercise for core and to work the back extensors to me is squats. I just squats, full range of motion. And in the beginning, my clients were asking, they signed up for my program, and we were doing squats, and they're like, oh, squats are not in the Pilates repertoire. I'm like, yes, but they are in my repertoire, because good for you,
they're
my friend.
The repertoire of life.
Exactly. Do you want to go to the bathroom the rest of your life without any help? Well, then let's do squats or getting in and out of the car. Pick something up, you know, off the floor, or do gardening. You just need squats. And a couple months ago, I met with someone, one of my older friends, and we haven't seen each other for a couple of years, and she's been doing Pilates, and she said, my Pilates instructor said, we don't need to do squats because they are, you know, you don't need to do them. And that was a really big surprise that someone says that you don't need to do squats, you know. I mean, we are all different, yes, but I think some version of a squat would never hurt.
Yeah. I have a question for you. At what point in your Pilates journey did you make those connections for yourself? Where in your journey did you make those connections for yourself?
When I started my clinical Pilates, my diploma, and that was a really big change in my life, the way I train and the way I train my clients as well. So it's all about functional training, you know, rather than looking at the Pilates repertoire. Yes, it's good, the breathing, you know, it's such a good exercise. And there is some evidence that Pilates is one of the most effective exercises to treat back pain. And I'm not saying it's the best. It's one of the best, because everyone is different. You might enjoy something else. So Pilates is not the best, but it is definitely effective. So when I finished my diploma, or when I was actually studying the diploma of clinical Pilates, that's when I realized that, wow, there is, you know, when we were doing research and going into evidence-based practice, that's when I changed. Okay, we need to do more squats. We need to do more of this, more of that, you know. And you pick, you know, you don't just go towards one area. You kind of like blend in everything nicely. Mobility, flexibility, strength. And I think that is the key when it comes to treating low back pain, and also treating the whole person and not just the body part.
Yeah, treating the whole person and not just the body part, I think, is super important.
Exactly. And when it comes to chronic, again, we have to also address sleeping, you know, has the person's well-being, again, not just the body, but also, you know, the life and the lifestyle and everything. Because as we know, smoking can affect the vertebrae, the discs, you know, the structure makes the spine, to say, weaker, you know, it affects the spine negatively. There are positive effects like exercising, and there are negative effects like smoking.
Yeah. You know, I actually also have an example with a client. She would come in and she would say, like, I have this feeling like a belt underneath my rib cage, and it's like tight, like around her diaphragm and her mid back. And as we were working, you know, she'd feel better, but then every week she'd come back with the same comment. And I thought, okay, well, from an exercise perspective, I've assessed, I have my assessment techniques that I do. We've addressed it, we've decompressed, we've mobilized. She's moving better. There's still some rigidity, like we're still working towards our goals, but this feeling keeps coming back. And then she came back, and it was after the holidays, and she said, oh, I'm so much better now. My pain is it's like gone completely. I was like, oh my gosh, what happened? She's like, I've had this really stressful situation in my life for a really long time, and it has finally resolved. I didn't go into her personal life, but it was resolved. And she said, and now it's gone. And I thought, yeah, like, you know, there's exercise is great. You know, it's going to help so much, but there's so many more factors that affect our well-being. And for her, that stress, that tension was, you know, a much bigger contributor to that pain relief than actual movement.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know, because when, as I said, I have too much going on in my life, it usually affects my back. I think everyone has a weak point or a weak, you know, weakness in our bodies. Some of us, shoulder, mid back, low back, hips. It depends, but for me, it was always my low back. And also because it runs in my family, you know, both my dad and my mother had back pain, you have more chance, you know, to have back pain if you had it in your family. So do you think it's unnecessary then to engage our core before the movement, to sucking the belly in, for example, when we do abs?
Good question. And, you know,
or do you practice that? Do you say that to your clients, that suck the belly in before the movement?
No, I never say suck the belly in, you know, definitely not. However, it depends what we're working on, right? If we're going for like mid-back series or 100 or something along those lines, and a client has come to me and they have back pain, I'm not going to throw them into an exercise and get them to just like do whatever on the reformer. We're going to go through the exercise together, and I want them to feel safe. So I will ask them to exhale, to find that strength in their body and to pull with the arms. And I actually have a client, and today we focused a lot, yes, on core engagement, but so much of the breath, because I found that as she was moving, as opposed to pulling on the straps when we were doing her core and arm work, she'll go through a sort of like, and it was just a movement pattern. And I know that we have some back pain that we're dealing with. So we were emphasizing a nice strong exhale. That strong exhale, which is important, helps her fire up the core. There was, you know, it was pointless for me to say pull your belly in, because it wouldn't address the fact that she was losing like focus of the movement, and I needed her to focus. Strong exhale. We have a nice connection, not just in her abdominals. Her body feels still. Her legs aren't flying during the arm work. She's in control of her body. She feels safe, and then she pulls on the straps. So we don't have any weird surprises, and she doesn't come out or jump out of a position that she's not comfortable in. So yes, there was an emphasis on engaging the core. There was an emphasis on engaging the whole body. There was an emphasis on the breath. So as a movement, we focused, core was a part of the things that worked, but it wasn't like suck in your belly, you know, flatten it out. Like, it's not about the visual. It's about the control, her feeling of safety during movement, and optimal, I can't say optimal execution because it varies on the person, but the optimal execution for her, because I know, and I've been working with her for a long time.
I think it comes down what works for the client. If it works to suck the belly in, then go for it.
I mean, I personally haven't heard anyone, you know, really benefiting from suck the belly in mentality. It's usually a breath in and not much happening there. But I'm sure there are people to whom that cue works and, you know.
Exactly. I used to say that for a good 8 years, 9 years before movement, suck the belly in. And that was the thing. But I think everything changes, you know, evidence changes, research changes. We know more and more. We know more today than what we knew 25 years ago or 10 years ago even. I think we are all learning here. And along the way, everyone makes mistakes, you know, and we are evolving. And I think we are growing and that's how it should be, right? With movement as well as... we know more about back pain as well.
Yeah, I think it's important to also, you know, be able to adapt and change our beliefs as the information that we have changes. You know, I think the worst thing as movement practitioners is we get stuck on doing something the way we learned it and we shook narrow vision there. So, you know, I think it's important to keep learning and learning a research-based approach to exercise versus, you know, trendy approach to exercise. So as long as we're growing in that research-based way of moving, we should and we will be adapting continuously our way of, you know, teaching, cueing, emphasizing certain areas of exercise or the body.
Yeah. I would like to share with you, I found a really interesting research and I am going to just to read a part of it. It takes over 3,000 newtons of force to fracture the spine. That's like a 500-pound object crashing into a wall at 30 miles per hour. Yet some still believe our spine is very fragile and it needs constant stabilization. But the truth is, our spines are way stronger than we think. The reason I wanted to point this out, because I see it on social media many times that bending down and bending over can destabilize your spine. And unfortunately, people believe that. And that's when they... or scared to move, you know, we scare them. Some people scare them and that's really sad. So everyone who listens, your spine is strong and definitely not fragile and pain doesn't equal weakness.
And also another thing that I think is important to remember is that our spine is made up of vertebra. You know, they're bones stacked on top of each other. That means they're joints, they're connected, they're movable. And the way we've evolved, if there's a joint, it was designed to move. So if we weren't supposed to bend down and, you know, pick something up, touch our toes, touch our knees, our spine wouldn't allow for that flexion. Our hips wouldn't allow for that flexion. So, you know, I can't bend here, but I can bend here and here. And it's the same with the spine. There's no one stick through my spine. It's all little bones and it was designed to move. And I think the further we go away from the way our body is designed to be, the worse our state will be. That is why the sedentary lifestyle is, you know, so terrible for our backs. That not so much sedentary lifestyle, but the prolonged sitting culture, right? We'll sit and it's 8 hours a day like this, you know? So it's not this posture that's bad. It's the it's hours of this posture that's bad for you, you know?
Exactly. I definitely agree with that. So yeah, our spine is definitely strong and not fragile. And you don't have to focus on sucking the belly in definitely when you are doing an ab workout, I believe. And all right, this was our episode for today. Thanks for listening to the Back to Movement podcast with our very special guest, Mila Alashina from Switzerland. I hope you enjoyed this episode and all the insights you learned about the core and how strong your spine is. And again, thanks for listening and see you next time.
Thank you.